We're back here on In Focus News Radio KMAN. I'm Brandon Peoples, Dave Lewis joining me in studio as well. And we are talking with Alana Parker from the Riley County Historical Museum. She's the curator of design, talking Hartford House. Dave, did you want to? Okay, we'll continue on here with our conversation. We're talking Hartford House, and let's talk about where it was located originally.
So this Hartford House was found down on 523 Colorado Street here in Manhattan. And over time, and as I mentioned, it is a small, that Hartford House is a very small house, a 14 foot by 18 foot. So obviously over time, you know, this came here in 1855, the families that lived in it had to build onto this home to accommodate their family size and the needs that they had. So it had been built around over time. So in 1971, the house that was located there was going to be torn down, and somebody realized, well, there's one of those original Hartford houses that is a part of this house that's being torn down there at 523 Colorado. So it was the Meisner family that then donated it to the Riley County Historical Society as they're removing the other pieces of the house to get down to the bones of that Hartford house. And then, so as I mentioned, 1971, it was donated to the Riley County Historical Society. And it was actually there in place. If you've ever been to the museum, it was there before the museum was even built. So it's neat to see photographs. You see this lonely Hartford house there. See how much our community has changed over time. But then the museum was built in 1976 and then opened in 1977. But it was the Rotary Club in Tau Kappa Epsilon, the fraternity, that assisted with helping with the funding, the move, and the restoration of that house and what we have today. And as I mentioned, you go in there, it is almost like taking a step back in time. Everything is authentic to the time period. It has, the bed is a rope mattress, or the base, and it has the corn husk mattress on top of it, the feather mattress on top of that. So students, when they come in, they're able to sit on the bed and get a sense of what that felt like. It, of course, is not heated or air conditioned. So when students come in, they do come to visit in the colder months too. Usually doesn't take very long if it's cold for them to start getting fussy. They'll be out there 30 seconds and they start getting cold, and I feel like that's just a perfect opportunity, and we don't keep them out there very long, but to explain that this is what it was like all the time if you're a pioneer coming out here to Kansas. And I did mention we do have a wood burning stove that was available for passengers on the Hartford. You could purchase one of these wood burning stoves, and there is one there in the Hartford house. But thinking about the effort that it would take, we've already mentioned a lack of trees for lumber, for fuel for the fire that's around. So we also have our bison chips that are there. Talking about students, you would have to go pick this up to use for fuel for your fire just to keep warm in the winter time.
I mean, things were a lot harder back then, you know, and not that long ago. I mean, 165 years ago, but still, I mean, that's unbelievable, just the struggle they had.
Yes. And so, as I mentioned, one of those perfect examples that ties in so well with the Hartford House is Julia Louisa Lovejoy and her diary. So if you don't mind, I thought I'd talk a little bit about her story, because it's pretty remarkable. So as I mentioned, Julia's husband came out here, and he was actually with Isaac Goodnow's group. But Julia came out a little later. So it was the men that came out. They were going to establish the town site, and then the ladies would come out later. So it was March 6th of 1855 was when Julia left Vermont. As I mentioned, took a train and then took a steamboat, and it was the Kate Swinney steamboat, which it's amazing that they would specifically mention in their diaries. You can find photographs of the Kate Swinney steamboat. Mentioned she arrives in Kansas City, and what she talks about Kansas City being like as a desolate place. People are sick. So I do want to mention, as Julia is coming out here, she is, I think, 42 or 43 years old. So she has her husband and son, 17-year-old son, are already closer to what would be Manhattan. But Julia's coming out. She has her daughter, Juliet. She has her daughter, Edith. She is also pregnant. So here she is, 40 years old, coming out, leaving her comfortable life in New England behind to come out here to Manhattan. So she gets to Lawrence, Kansas. She had to hire a teamster, so somebody to drive the wagon. The man that she hired got drunk, stole their personal belongings. So here she is. She's pregnant with two children, no belongings, trying to make her way out here to Manhattan. And also, her daughter Edith contracts measles. So as they're coming out here by wagon, unfortunately, her daughter Edith died of measles. And she talks about that experience and what that was like, having to leave her daughter behind in Lawrence and continue on here to Manhattan. But I love one of her diary, and this would be a little later. So she has her baby, and this is May 1856. She says, "Great bend of the Blue River in a little cabin hastily thrown together. This is now our home. We have occupied a balloon house," she says, "a so-called ready-made brought on the ill-fated steamer Hartford that was burnt to the water's edge on her trip from Manhattan to Lawrence." So she is specifically mentioning living in one of those Hartford houses. But in her diary, she mentions last winter in this house, so they're alone. In this house last winter, they were freezing. The cold was so intense, she had to wrap her baby in blankets and furs just to keep him from perishing near the stove. So having that description, like I said, really puts it into perspective. When you go into the Hartford house for 30 seconds and start complaining about the cold, well, here Julia is. She lost a daughter. She's got her new baby and her other child trying to survive the winter while her husband is out traveling. So she's kind of on her own here in a new place. And I highly recommend, if anybody is interested in reading Julia's diary, it is available through the Kansas State Historical Society, the digitized version, and thankfully it's also transcribed. It makes it a little easier to read, but it just really gives you a great sense of what it was like here in territorial Kansas.
Yeah, just totally miserable.
Yes. And one thing I haven't mentioned yet. So Kansas Territory opened in 1854 under the Kansas-Nebraska Act. And so when that territory opened, it was under the doctrine of popular sovereignty. So that meant whoever came here to Kansas to settle, they were going to decide by vote whether Kansas would enter the Union as a free state or a slave state. So, of course, this is when you get into that really tumultuous time of bleeding Kansas and the border war. And what I think is interesting, it's very easy when you think of course, when you say border war, right there on the Kansas-Missouri border. So what was happening, so you had free staters like Julia Lovejoy and her husband and Isaac Goodnow, Isaac and Ellen, coming here to Kansas to help Kansas become a free state. And that was their sole reasoning for coming here, was to help Kansas become free. You also had Missourians that would come over to Kansas and vote, intimidate voters, and then go right back to Missouri. So you have this very contentious time in territorial history here in Kansas, which really, I think you could argue, the Civil War started right here in Kansas. And Julia really talks about quite a bit of that, the violence that was going on here in Kansas, even in Manhattan at the time. So it's fascinating to read. Really ties into that bigger, broader picture of territorial Kansas and bleeding Kansas.
Wow, that's fascinating. That'd be a good read for sure. Let's take a quick time out. We'll come back more with Alana Parker, Raleigh County Historical Museum, on In Focus.